are listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. On Tuesday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals declined to rehear the case of a transgender inmate in Idaho. Adri Edmo is suing the state for gender reassignment surgery, a surgery her lawyers argue is medically necessary. However, Governor Brad Little is not done fighting this case. Little says he plans to appeal to the Supreme Court. To help us understand the latest developments in this story, we're joined live over Skype by reporter Amanda Peacher, along with Boise State Public Radio reporter James Dawson. They are both part of the team behind the podcast Locked. This is our investigative podcast that took a deep dive into Edmo's case. And we're also joined in studio by Edmo's attorney, Deborah Ferguson. I want to thank all of you for joining us today.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
And a quick note, we did ask Governor Little's office to join us, and I want to read a part of the statement they sent us earlier this week. I am disappointed the majority of the Ninth Circuit declined to reverse its flawed decision. I am encouraged, however, that several judges recognized in dissenting opinions that the decision conflicts with decisions of multiple other circuits, goes well beyond the Eighth Amendment's text and original meaning, and is contrary to more than four decades of Supreme Court precedent. I remain committed to appealing this case to the U.S. Supreme Court. That effort is already underway, and to ensure that Idaho taxpayers do not have to pay for a procedure that is not medically necessary. That was a quote from Governor Little. Amanda, I want to start with you. We have had you on the show before at different points in the case. It is complicated, however. So can you just remind us of the details of the case and why Edmo is suing the state?
Sure. So Adri Edmo has been incarcerated in Idaho since 2012, and she has been asking for treatment for gender dysphoria pretty much that entire time. So gender dysphoria is a condition where your physical body doesn't align with your gender identity. And for some people, it can cause significant distress. And Adri Edmo says that for her, it does. So the state did provide some treatment, like hormone therapies, but Edmo said that it wasn't enough, and in fact, she tried to self-castrate twice while in prison. Her attorneys argue that that's a clear sign that she needs gender confirmation surgery, and that denying it amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. Now, on the other side, the state of Idaho and Corizon, the private healthcare provider contracted by the state, say that it's not medically necessary for Adri Edmo to receive this surgery. So that's the crux of this case, whether gender confirmation surgery is necessary for this particular inmate at this particular time.
So Amanda, how did her case end up all the way at the Ninth Circuit? And also, how in the world did it get there twice?
So she won first in federal district court in Idaho before Judge Windmill, and then the state of Idaho and Corizon appealed to the Ninth Circuit to rehear that case. And then she won again before a panel of three judges in the Ninth Circuit in August, and the state of Idaho asked the Ninth Circuit to reconsider that decision, so basically to have the entire more than two dozen judges from the Ninth Circuit weigh in and rehear this. So the latest win this week for Edmo is that the Ninth Circuit declined to rehear that case. And so it's the final ruling by the Ninth Circuit, and it's the highest ruling of an appellate court on this particular issue.
So Deborah, I want to bring you into the conversation. You are based in Boise, and you are one of the attorneys representing Adri Edmo. How did she react to the news that her case would not be retried at the Ninth Circuit?
She was very excited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Happy, yes.
So, of course, though, the governor's office, we just read a statement from him. They say they plan to take the case to the Supreme Court. So if SCOTUS were to take this up, what do you think your chances would be there?
Well, you know, that would be hard to say. I mean, they take so few of the cases that are offered to them. I mean, very, very few a year. So when I look at what happened earlier in another circuit just a few months ago on a transgender surgery case, they declined to take that case up. So, you know, we're hoping this is the final say.
And Amanda, I mean, since as Deborah mentioned, I mean, the Supreme Court does take up so few cases, but what do we know about that process and then really the chances of the Supreme Court actually hearing this?
Well, the state technically has 90 days to file. But if it's serious about wanting the Supreme Court to hear this case or to consider it, it will need to do so quicker because it's likely that the Idaho judge, Judge Windmill, will have the state start moving forward with providing the surgery to Adri Edmo in the meantime. So the clock is ticking, and you know if they don't file that appeal soon, then they could be out of luck. They might be required to provide that surgery. So a couple things they'll have to ask the Supreme Court essentially to put a hold on Adri Edmo's surgery, and then, as Deborah mentioned, the Supreme Court would actually have to decide to take the case. And you know, as Deborah said, the Supreme Court has already considered a similar case with the opposite outcome out of the Fifth Circuit. So the Supreme Court is aware that there is a split in the circuits. You could argue that would be a reason for them to deny hearing this case. Or you could also argue that the Supreme Court justice might say, well, this is continuing to percolate. This keeps coming up before us. So maybe this is the time to hear a case. There's really no certainty here.
So in the meantime, Deborah, what is the status of Adri? Because the Ninth Circuit did rule to grant her surgery. I mean, months ago, they ruled in this. So where is she in the process to getting the surgery? Because there are steps that have to be taken before the actual surgery.
Yes, that's correct. So she is getting her pre-surgical treatments currently, and those are ongoing. And unless and until, and we would expect when the mandate issues, which is kind of a technical thing that happens after an appeal with 7 days after, that is also when the stay that's in place would be lifted. So unless or until the state acts to try to get another stay in place, things can move forward.
So, and as Amanda mentioned, not that 90-day window we're talking about?
No, that's a different time frame. And what Amanda was referencing is the time in which they have to file a petition for certiorari with the U.S. Supreme Court.
So, Amanda, the clock is also, though, ticking in another way, because Edmo is set to be released from prison next year, correct?
Right. And we know that she's not eligible for parole. So it's not like the state could say, well, you know, we're going to go ahead and let you go. But we know that the courts can be very slow. In fact, the court was a little bit slow to make this final decision from the Ninth Circuit. So really, even though she's slated to be released mid-year next year, that's not a lot of time for all of this to play out.
Yeah. Jimmy, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, and speaking to how long it took the Ninth Circuit to reach this decision, I mean, the opinion itself was really eye-opening because you had this kind of scathing opinion from about a third of the entire Ninth Circuit saying, we disagree with the fact that you are choosing to not rehear this case either before the panel or the, a panel of even more Ninth Circuit judges. And one of the quotes that I saw that kind of popped out to me is that, quote, as judges, our role is not to take sides in matter of conflicting medical care. Rather, our duty is to faithfully interpret the Constitution. That duty commands that we apply the Eighth Amendment, not our sympathies, since Edmo was suing under the fact that she thought the state was violating her Eighth Amendment rights to, Anyway.
So what happens then if this continues to go on, Deborah, the case itself, and then Adri gets released before she has the surgery? I mean, is that a possibility?
I suppose it is a possibility, but I think right now the timeline is in our favor that the court's orders will be obeyed and the surgery will be, you know, is required and will occur.
Amanda, what do you know about public perception of this case? Because that was something you explored in the podcast Locked.
Well, I think that this case is part of a broader and vibrant conversation going on right now about transgender rights, but also what is medically necessary care when someone experiences gender dysphoria. And because states and prisons are required to provide medical care to inmates under their jurisdiction. They have no other option to get care otherwise. This case and others like it are really at the forefront of that discussion of what is medically necessary and when is it medically necessary care. I think it's contentious in Idaho and beyond because public perception hasn't really kept pace with medical consensus around treatment for gender dysphoria. So for a lot of people, they don't necessarily understand the experience of gender dysphoria or what is medically necessary when you experience it. But the vast majority of the medical community agrees that in some cases it's enough to treat someone with hormone therapy. In some cases, you may require gender confirmation surgery. So here in Idaho, then it's contentious and not well understood, and public perception is reflecting what Brad Little says, that you know, medically necessary care is not always including gender confirmation surgery for these inmates.
Go ahead.
You know, I think that brings up really a good point in that we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that here the state government is continuing to pour large amounts of money in defending the prison's decision to deny her what the courts have deemed medically necessary care. This is surgery that's covered under their Horizon Healthcare contract and wouldn't cost taxpayers additional money. And it just really doesn't make sense to me when there was a multi-day evidentiary hearing and a ruling from the district court. It was appealed to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit issued a unanimous decision upholding the district court's findings. The state persisted, as we're here now, with asking for an en banc review of a much larger panel of the Ninth Circuit. And a large majority of the Ninth Circuit said, no, we are not going to hear this case. So at some point, you would hope enough is enough.
And I will say that I just yesterday asked the state for the latest breakdown on costs for fighting this case, and it's about $372,000 on the state side. That's not including the cost from Horizon. So it's a hefty cost for the state to fight this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not including what the costs will be for her Edmo's representation, because the state would also pay those fees.
Jimmy, I want to pivot a little bit from Edmo's case to some potential bills being discussed in the legislature right now. Idaho lawmakers, they are also taking aim at trans rights this year. And since we've been talking about the Edmo case, I want you to bring us up to speed on what we are looking at when it comes to trans rights.
Yeah, it really hasn't been a good week if you're a transgender person in Idaho. You have three bills. One from Representative Christy Zitto would make it a felony for any medical provider to provide transitional therapy, whether that's surgery or even hormone treatment to someone under the age of 18. And actually, this is being added into a law that was passed last year, which bans female genital mutilation. You have another bill from Representative Barbara Ehart that would ban trans women athletes from being able to play on segregated teams broken down by gender. And then you have a new bill that was introduced this morning from Representative Julianne Young, which brings up the birth certificate issue again, where you could not change your gender marker on your birth certificate. And there were some quotes that I pulled where it says that having these, static birth your gender at birth would, quote, it impacts the health and safety of all individuals, and then, quote, this would constitute a breach of the public trust if you change it.
And this has been an ongoing issue, this gender marker issue, correct?
Oh, it has been, yeah. So, I mean, in 2018, you had a federal district court judge, Candy Dale, writing an order saying that this violates the 14th Amendment, that the policy under the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, which made it so you couldn't change your gender marker, was unconstitutional. State health officials had to let them change it after the lawsuit. You had the Health and Welfare Board ever since. They tried to make it so if you were a minor, a transgender minor, then you would have to get your doctor's permission. That's since been vacated. Lawmakers have taken a look at whether or not they could change it through administrative rules. And this latest bill from Representative Young seems to clearly violate this court order.
Let's talk a little bit about Representative Barbara Ehart's bill. In your reporting yesterday, you mentioned that in this bill on banning transgender women from segregated team sports, Representative Ehart is arguing this could have unintended consequences with the NCAA. So what is going on there?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this bill, if it were to pass, if you were a transgender woman, you simply could not play on any women's or girls' teams if it's sponsored by a public school in Idaho, either K through 12 or at the collegiate level. The NCAA, which oversees most of the major collegiate sports in America, has this policy that it instituted in 2011 where its member universities and colleges must allow transgender athletes to participate in the sport that aligns with their gender identity. Trans men can do so immediately. Trans women, you have to undergo testosterone suppression therapy for 1 year, and then you can join the team. And it's unclear, you know, what's going to happen. I reached out for comment to the NCAA, but you have Boise State University, Idaho State University, Northwest Nazarene University, and University of Idaho are all NCAA members. It would also include the NAIA, which is Lewis Clark State College and College of Idaho, which also has a similar policy to the NCAA. So if you're out of compliance with that, does that mean that we don't see Bronco football anymore? Mm. You know, Vandal basketball, you name it.
So where are we with these bills right now, in particular the one with Representative Ehart? That seems to have gotten the most media scrutiny so far.
Yeah, all of these bills have been introduced so far. That was this week. They still need a public hearing within their respective committees on the House side. After that public hearing, if it passes out of that, goes straight to the House floor, and then they would need to go through the whole process again on the Senate side before Governor Brad Little would have the opportunity to sign, veto it, or let it become law without his signature.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today. A lot to unpack here today. We've been talking with Boise State Public Radio reporter James Dawson and freelance reporter Amanda Peacher, who joined us by Skype, and attorney Deborah Ferguson. Thank you all so much for the conversation.
Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
Up next, Indigenous Archives in Seattle are moving out of the Northwest. We're going to learn more about why federal agencies made this decision. I'm Gemma Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters.